There's a 10% chance Bush will get impeached before he leaves office. There's an 18% chance Osama bin Laden will either be captured or neutralized by the end of the year. And odds are Melinda Doolittle's going to win American Idol. She's more than twice as likely as Lakeisha politics to pop culture. Justin Wolfers is an economist at the Wharton School of Business, and he studies prediction markets like Intrade. Hi, Justin.
Hey, Faith.
So Osama bin Laden neutralized by the end of the year. Do you know what that is? Is that like a vasectomy or what?
You know, they've been running bets like that for a couple of years now. And
There's a 10% chance Bush will get impeached before he leaves office. There's an 18% chance Osama bin Laden will either be captured or neutralized by the end of the year. And odds are Melinda Doolittle's going to win American Idol. She's more than twice as likely as Lakeisha Jones. That's all according to data from Intrade, a website where you can make bets on what's going to happen in everything from politics to pop culture. Justin Wolfers is an economist at the Wharton School of Business, and he studies prediction markets like Intrade. Hi, Justin.
Hey, Faith.
So Osama bin Laden neutralized by the end of the year. Do you know what that is? Is that like a vasectomy or what?
You know, they've been running bets like that for a couple of years now. And for better or worse, we haven't had anything that even looked remotely like neutralized.
No, he's still out there roaming. So, Justin, is it really accurate to say that Melinda Doolittle is more likely to win American Idol than Lakeisha Jones, or that Hillary is most likely going to be the Democratic nominee?
It's a great question. So we've seen markets like this now being run on elections, on sporting events, on financial outcomes, on who's going to win the Oscars. For years and years now, and folks like myself have been out there collecting data on how they do and forecasting the future. And again, we keep learning that these markets, prediction markets, do a better job in predicting not just politics, but also Oscar winners and all these other really fun things. So I'm not promising we're going to capture Osama, but the good news for Melinda Doolittle is, at the very least, it looks like she's at least an even money shot to win American Idol.
Justin, why do they work so well?
So part of the magic here is it's you put your money where your mouth is. So gambling on these sorts of things comes pretty naturally to an Australian like myself. Maybe it's a little different for an American.
Come on, you're not Australian with an accent like that.
I've been over here long enough. I feel like I'm starting to fit in. So
no, I got a sense of it. So it's how much like sports betting is this prediction market stuff?
You can think about this two ways, Faith. One is it's exactly like sports betting. You can bet on who's going to be the next president. You can bet on who's going to win American Idol. The other way you can think about this is it's just like the stock market. Just like the stock market, what you're doing is you're buying stock in Melinda Doolittle winning American Idol. And if you want to win, if you want to buy a stock that pays $100 if she wins, you have to pay right now $50 for that stock. If you're willing to pay $50 for that, then I'd reckon that you probably think she's about a 50% chance of winning. And so we see lots of people all across the country betting in this market. They all have different views and perspectives, and the stock price or the betting odds aggregate all those different opinions.
What if Melinda Doolittle has a really bad week? Can you sell your stock?
Absolutely. And okay. So this can make watching American Idol a whole heck of a lot more fun.
Yeah.
You think someone misses a note and you can sell the stock halfway through the song. I'll admit I'm not that much of an American Idol fan, but watching it's one of the few ways to make baseball interesting, actually.
And, does it make cricket interesting? Is cricket ever going to be interesting?
No, I'm afraid nothing can do that. Well, actually, something could, but that's beer.
Or an unexpected murder, actually,
yes.
Which is kind of sad. Wait, so can you make real money doing this, Justin?
If I could, I would probably have a day job. I'd probably quit my day job. But there most certainly are people out there buying and selling these stocks. And, you know, if someone's losing money, then someone must be winning money because that money doesn't just disappear. You know, the thing I think is really exciting about this is not the day traders who are winning on the ups and the downs here. It's that, you know, if the price really does come to reflect the wisdom of crowds, so many people betting on this, then it becomes a really easy way to become an expert on a whole lot of things. So, you know, you and I were talking semi-competently about American Idol. And in fact, I was able to tell you who I think's going to win. I think it'll be Melinda Doolittle. I haven't watched it all season.
I haven't either.
I know, but you just became an expert.
Right.
Because all you had to do was look at the betting odds. And it turns out you're also an expert on Middle Eastern politics.
Oh, I
and,
am,
American
am I?
Politics. Yeah, you looked at the betting odds. You know a whole heck of a lot right now.
So is this are websites like this drawing a lot of attention from, say, people who run political campaigns?
Yeah, so it's a real threat to a certain part of the established political order being pollsters. Because think what a pollster does. A pollster goes out and asks a bunch of people who they're going to vote for, and then they sell that information to someone else. Well, these markets allow a whole lot of people to tell you not who they're going to vote for, but who they think is going to win. And in comparison after comparison, these markets do a better job than pollsters. They do a better job than experts. They do a better job than the talking heads you see on TV.
Yeah, I love the story of how InTrade began to show that Democrats would take the Senate in 2006, even before the news networks were reporting it.
Oh, it's a terrific. It was actually a really interesting evening. I had a bunch of friends over. We were, you know, eating pizza and drinking beer and watching the returns. And, you know, we were flicking between CNN and Fox trying to figure out who was first with the news. And the amazing thing was, in state after state and race after race, the markets were figuring it out ahead of the TV. It's probably not that surprising, though, because there was people betting on these markets from all across the country.
Right.
And so they were aggregating the info a little quicker.
Justin, very quickly, is there a way of stacking the decks in favor of a candidate? You know, if you're an Obama supporter, could you buy a bunch of Obama shares just to raise his numbers?
You could, but then if I saw someone doing that and I thought he wasn't going to win, then the first thing I'd do is I'd start selling the shares. So the campaigns do try and manipulate these markets, but they tend not to be successful because it's also a great way of losing money.
Justin, please hang on a minute. We need to take a break. Coming up, music from British band Fujian Miyagi. I'm Faith Saley, and this is Fair Game from PRI. I'm Faith Saley, and this is Fair Game from PRI. I'm talking with economist Justin Wolfers about how economics can predict the future. Justin, right now, InTrade has the likelihood of Alberto Gonzalez resigning by the end of the year at 70%. And it's easy to see how the market might predict, you know, that Hillary is a front runner. We have polls and whatnot. But it's not as obvious to see how it would establish that the attorney general has a 70% chance of resigning by the end of 2007. On what are these bettors basing their decisions?
Great question. It's, I mean, some of these things that they're running markets on are really crazy. And I think you want to think about markets as just a way of aggregating information. And so just like anything else, it's garbage in, garbage out. So, for instance, they ran markets on something even more bizarre a couple of years ago. Who's going to be the next pope? By jingo, you got to think that thing's hard to predict.
Yeah.
It actually turned out the market got that one right, but
they did?
They did indeed.
Because all the newscasters were predicting someone from Italy or Nigeria.
Let me give you a different example of a market that did fail, which is there was markets on whether we'd find weapons of mass destruction in Iraq.
Mm.
And if you think about that, you know, no one... It's very unlikely that any of the public who were betting in this market had any useful information. So you take a whole lot of bad guesses. You add them up and you still get a bad guess at the end of the day. Now, coming back to your question, which is about Alberto Gonzalez, we know a little bit about this. So we think that the president will probably fire him if he becomes a big enough political liability. And interestingly, when you said that Gonzalez is today a 70% chance to be out by the end of the year, it was as high as 80 earlier in the week.
Wow.
And you've seen the president stood by him for another few days. And so if the president continues to stand by him, maybe we should update our views about these things.
So clearly these prediction markets react very fast. Did they have a very fast reaction to John Edwards making an announcement about his wife's health?
My memory of that was they may have reacted very quickly upward, actually.
Right.
A view that this is going to be somehow good for his political future. I looked at it this morning. It looked like it had settled back down again.
Right. Now, we're still in the grips of March Madness here, and you've written about how there's evidence of point shaving in college basketball. Will you explain how that works?
Sure. So it's sometimes you set up a gambling market sometimes, and it creates an incentive for corruption. And so point shaving is just, if I'm a team that's expected to win the game by, say, 12 points or more, a nefarious gambler could come and say to me, Justin, it's okay, you can still win the game, which is what you care about as a basketball player, but what I want you to do is win by 9 or 10 points instead. And then that gambler would go and bet in Vegas that my team will fail to cover the 12-point spread.
Mm-hmm.
So if you thought that a lot of this was occurring, then what you'd see is teams that were 12-point favorites, too many of them would win by maybe 9 points or 10 points instead of 13 points or 14 points.
Okay.
And so what I did in the research study is went back and put together a data sample, I think, of 44,000 past games, trying to figure out how often these strong favourites just fail to beat the spread versus how often they just barely beat the spread. And it looked like the strong favourites, maybe up to 5% of games, are involved with point shaving.
Is there a way you can use economics to catch the cheaters?
So that's the disappointing thing here. So the research technique here is that you can't catch any individual team doing this, but if enough teams are doing it, it's going to leave some systematic footprints in the data. So what happens in any individual game involving point shaving is the players involved are incredibly careful to make it very hard to find anything in the data about it. And so the way you point shave, by the way, is it's not that you miss baskets, it's that you stand maybe an extra 6 inches or a foot back in defense.
Right.
And that won't show up in the box score statistics at all. And so for any individual, it's incredibly difficult to find evidence of this. But again, if you look at tens of thousands of games, what you'll find systematically is just a few too many who just fail to beat the spread a suspiciously large number of times.
Is the NCAA having any sort of acceptance of your theories at all?
I actually think the NCAA, I mean, they're not going to say it in these words, but I think that they actually agree with my concerns. So if you think about the resources that the NCAA devote to trying to educate young players about gambling, they're really worried about corruption in college sports. They actually ran their own survey. There's lots of ways of trying to measure how much corruption there is in the world, and they're all imperfect. One way is my way, using sort of statistical inferences. Mm-hmm. Another way is to ask people. And so they ran their own surveys in which they asked their players anonymously, have you ever been involved in gambling on sports? Are you aware of players who've accepted bribes from gamblers and so on? And their numbers were actually surprisingly close to mine in terms of the prevalence.
Yeah, because I was about to say people lie, but statistical inferences don't. But it sounds like these anonymous players were telling the truth.
Well, there's a very clever way to do this, which is you don't ask people if they did it. You ask if they're aware of others doing it.
Right, of course. Now, Justin, what would you say is going on in economics today? I mean, much has been written about how a new generation, and you're at the forefront of that generation, is using the tools of the discipline and applying them to more diverse questions. Why do you think that's happening? Why is economics so sexy?
Well, Faith, I never thought anyone would describe economics as sexy, so clearly something's changing. I think that the real father figure of this movement of economics into asking whatever questions are interesting is Gary Becker, a University of Chicago economist who won the Nobel Prize now over a decade ago. But it's this new view that economics is not a set of topics, it's not, you know, inflation and money supply, but it's a methodology or a lens through which one can look at the world. And so, you know, sociologists have always thought about sociology as a lens for looking at the world, and so why shouldn't economists? And, you know, we have a set of statistical techniques and also a way of viewing and trying to understand human behavior, which can be applicable to thinking about marriage and divorce, to thinking about point shaving, to thinking about whether the death penalty deters, and so on. And frankly, that makes it a really exciting time to be an economist, because these are kind of interesting and often, in some cases, policy-relevant questions as well.
Yeah, you've called, or some have called you, a forensic economist. Which would suggest that the bones and the blood splatters are the data, and then you construct the human scene around it?
A little bit. I mean, so one of the exciting things going on right now is everything we do, you're doing somehow, someone's tracking some data on it, which means that social scientists like myself are just drowning in an ocean of new data. And just by doing things like, I have colleagues who use data on credit cards. And so, you know, think how much you can understand about people's behavior from that. I have data from some bookmakers, and so I can understand how people gamble. I have data on all sorts of things. And so this new ocean of data.
Yes, and the Patriot Act is probably helping you do your job as well, right?
Unfortunately for me, the government likes to keep the government data for the government.
All right. Justin, finally, I saw a picture on your website, and I have to ask, because it wasn't clear, ponytail or no ponytail?
Well, it goes up and down with the seasons. It's
where are we at right now for spring?
Well, as we move into summer, we've got to move back to the ponytail and keep the hair off my neck and let me cool down a little, mate.
Justin, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Faith.
Justin Wolfers is an economist at the Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania.